Welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast. My name is Craig Crash Collins, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Brandon Scott, otherwise known as B. Scott. We got a lot to get into tonight. You know, for the last, you know, however many months, we've been talking about how, you know, the coronavirus has affected baseball, how it's affected basketball. Well, now we're going to dive in to football, because football was pretty much, about a month or so from being done when this whole stuff and the shutdown first started. We're going to get into the MLB, which, you know, is still on fire. We talked about it a little bit last week. But before we get into it, B. Scott, you know, as you know on this podcast, I am very rarely wrong. So I thought the Pacers, I was very pessimistic about how the season was going to go. I was like, well, now Sabonis isn't going to play. We're not going to see Oladipo. And, you know, I don't know, maybe the supporting cast can, you know, rise to the occasion. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. We don't know. And not only does TJ Warren go out and put up 53 in a win over the 76ers, which gives them, I think, fifth place now in the Eastern Conference for now. We'll see. But then they also get a big win just a few hours before this podcast started recording. So, you know, the Indiana
Pacers. He dropped another 34.
Yeah. So that up. The Indiana Pacers are looking pretty doggone good.
Yeah. And today, you know, they beat the Wizards, which it's the Wizards, the team that you said is going to shut it down after a week, which is now most likely going to be the Pelicans. But, yeah, the Pacers are looking really good. I mean, they are missing Sabonis, but that wasn't a surprise whatsoever. I mean, Joel Embiid basically owned the paint in that game with the Pacers and the 76ers. But – hey, they got Malcolm Brogdon back now from the neck strain. And Oladipo did not play today, but he's not going to play in a game when there's back-to-back days and games on consecutive days. So didn't need him. But I'm interested. I can't wait to see tomorrow when the Pacers square off against the Orlando Magic. And they are basically full health, except Sabonis, obviously. But, you know, Brogdon, Warren, Oladipo. Excited to see it. As of right now, with this bubble, the way that everything's going on in the bubble, the four hottest teams right now have got to be the Lakers, the Clippers, the Raptors, and the Pacers. And if I'm anybody in the East, I don't want to see the Pacers right now, because they look pretty good. And considering the Phoenix Suns paid the Indiana Pacers to take TJ Warren. Thank you.
Yeah, Chris Simmons, who sometimes, you know, makes an appearance on this podcast, he had a perfect tweet that was like, TJ Warren, 53 points, cash consideration, 0 points. So, you know, just the Pacers are looking pretty good. What's not looking good is the possibility of the rest of the baseball season this year. As we look at it right now, as of making the outline for the podcast, six members of the St. Louis Cardinals, three players, three staff members have tested positive. That number has gone up into the double digits as their series today was announced it would be postponed. Their series against the Detroit Tigers. So that's obviously not a good thing. This is after 21 members of the Marlins tested positive in the past week. Two Philly staff members tested positive, but is believed, I think later reported, that it was a false positive. Rob Manfred, the commissioner of the MLB, has told MLBPA that the season could be in jeopardy and has ordered a compliance officer to each team. Doubleheaders are now only 7 innings. So that's an interesting thing.
What is that going to do?
It'll make it easier to make up postponed games. That's somewhat. I mean,
okay. The issue at hand for the MLB right now is players and staff members can't act like adults and keep themselves self-quarantined to be able to do their jobs. So they're out there getting COVID. Now doubleheaders, only seven innings instead of a full game. Okay. Good job, Rob Manfred. Pat yourself on the back. You made some sort of decision. That doesn't do anything.
I personally think, I don't know if this will work, I personally think they should just, I've seen people say, well, suspend the players. I think if it gets bad enough, you know, just in the season, instead of ending the season, because there are teams doing it right. As we know, right, as of right now, we know of, you know, 26 teams that are doing it the right way. And I know that it makes for a schedule imbalance and that kind of thing, but just go off. It's kind of a gimmicky season anyway. So just kind of go off of winning percentage and shut the season down for specific teams. Say, you know, these other teams are doing, yeah, the other teams are doing this correctly. So let's actually reward the teams that are doing it right and say, okay, you know what? Other players are going to get paid. Other players who you may be rivaled against in free agency are going to get a chance to, you know, further their sample size while you guys are sitting out because you guys couldn't help yourselves but go to a bar or go to, you know, a night, you know, a strip club, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't know if that would work, but, you know, yeah, and I mean, it's been reported that Manfred has talked to their broadcast partners saying that there's a chance that, you know, letting them know, hey, there's a chance there won't be, you know, a postseason for them to broadcast. So it's just a hot mess. I don't know what the next step is. But
I'll tell you what, the thing this has proven to us is the NBA got it right. The bubble works. Now you can't have baseball in a bubble. You can't have football in a bubble, but we're going to get into the NFL and college football later. The correct answer for any of this is isolate your teams, quarantine them. You can still travel because these, let's be honest, they're not traveling commercial. They're traveling all, they have their own jets that they're traveling on. Heck, even in college football, that's how they do it too. They have like Purdue, they have their own basic commercial jet that they use just for the team. But just put the players, quarantine the players. You go to the ballpark, you go back to your hotel, you stay there. There's not, it's just same rules as the NBA. You practice, you play, you live within your bubble, but you know, still have them travel to other ballparks or whatever it may be. That's the answer. Don't let them have this free reign of, oh, I get to go home tonight, I'm coming and going, blah, 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 blah. No, because you've proven to us you can't handle that. That's beyond your handling abilities, which is sad. But guess what? It's time to step up and act like a leader, Rob Manfred. Time to say, you know, you either are going to follow these rules or we're done. It's not worth it. And I think you're going to see more, you're going to see them go, okay, let's try this. But they have to make that step. They can't just let them make their own, players make their own decisions of where they are, when they, you know, no. Quarantine the teams, move on. And that's it. You live within your bubble. You travel as a team, you eat as a team, everything is done as a team, just like the NBA is doing it. Obviously, you can't have it in one single location, but with your travel, you're not traveling amongst the public anyways, so you're going to be isolated and tough. That's just the way it is. You get paid that much for that to be able to, you know, do this for a living, so you can suck it up for a few months and do what you got to do. I know it sucks, but if a player wants to opt out, they can opt out. That's no problem. They've already done that. Yeah. I mean, heck, we're already seeing it right now in the middle of the season with the Mets. Giannis Cespedes, he went AWOL and decided to opt out without telling anybody, just upped and left his hotel room one night and got everybody freaked out. So,
yeah, I mean, that's completely understandable, and that's completely – I mean, and I think you're right because it is hard to – you wouldn't be able to do a bubble because of the personnel. Like the NBA is the perfect size and had the perfect remainder of the season. And this is, I mean, I don't want to give Manfred any credit, but obviously it hasn't been easy because I think it's easy to do a bubble for the NBA because they only had a few weeks left plus the playoffs. Whereas I think when they do their condensed season that starts in October or December or whatever it is, I think they're going to try to go city to city. And I'm sure they're going to have to, I don't think they're going to try like a, you know, 7 month bubble.
They'll tweak it and figure it out.
So Major League Baseball is the first sport to try a, you know, actual travel normal season, just no fans and like quarantine. And so it's been tough, but yeah, there needs to be some sort of, you know, it just needs to be very strict. And that actually brings us hot or cold is actually broken up through our different segments today. And that brings us to hot or cold as far as MLB is concerned. And that question is, the 2020 season will be completed in full. I think that's cold. Rob Manfred said Saturday that the situation is manageable, but that there's no reason to quit now. And my opinion is the MLB will only pull the plug if absolutely necessary. But as of right now, the trend isn't looking very good. It would take a PR nightmare type situation for MLB to finally pull the plug.
The Marlins situation wasn't a PR nightmare.
It was, but you can brush it under the rug as bad as it sounds and as sick as it is, you can brush it under the rug by saying, well, you know, we knew outbreaks were going to happen. This is the first one. This is a learning experience for everyone. But as teams continue, as of then, the Cardinals were healthy, as far as we know. So as it continues to get bad, it'll take a situation we've seen multiple teams already, but it will take – if we have another Marlins in here in a week or two, then it definitely will get shut down. But it will take – it'll take something like that. Like, basically – They're at the mercy of the virus, and it's going to take something like that for them to finally say, you know what, the pros of getting that broadcast money, which is the reason why we delayed this as far as we did, it doesn't outweigh, you know, these players and the PR nightmare that is going to ensue. So I think they'll pull the plug if they absolutely have to, and there's no other choice. But right now, especially those comments, like, there's no reason to quit now. There's no reason to quit now. Literally half of an active roster has coronavirus. Like, if that's not a reason, and then now a week later, another, you know, significant portion of a team has coronavirus. So if that's not reason to pull the plug.
If it was just the Marlins, I think we'd all be like, okay, it's just the Marlins, but you got the Cardinals. Yeah. That's a contender.
Yeah. That's a contender. And that's an organization that, you know, at least from a baseball standpoint, is well respected as far as how they run. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if, like, this would be like, you know, the equivalent would be, we're talking about football today, the equivalent would be like if the Cleveland Browns, like, were the first team to come, you know, have a big outbreak. Like, you'd be like, oh, look, the Cleveland Browns screwing it up for everyone again. But if the Patriots came out, obviously the Cardinals haven't been as successful as the Patriots the last few decades. But
we'll get to it, but the Patriots are not even going to really have a team.
Right.
So we'll get to that.
Right, exactly. But, like, that's the thing. So they, you know, that's as if the Patriots, an organization that's well-run, also had a widespread outbreak. Now you're like, okay, what are we doing here? So it'll be interesting. I think it'll, like, but I definitely think it's a cold take. Like, it's not looking good that the season gets finished, in my opinion. I hope it does. I want to see, I'm not super excited to see, you know, half the league in the playoffs, but it'll be playoff baseball and that'll be good at the time. But yeah, I don't think it's looking good right now.
Yeah, I agree. This is a cold take. I don't think it finishes. And I'll put money on who I think is going to be the next big outbreak. I don't know. For me, it just feels like the Milwaukee Brewers have that written all over them. A team that doesn't really know what they're doing. But, yeah, with the situation with Miami and how, you know, it not just affected them, it affected their opponent, it affected their previous opponent, and it's also going to affect their future opponents and their opponent's future. I mean, it's such a big trickle effect with one team that if this happens again, which is very likely, let's be honest, the way everything's going right now, I mean, it's like starting to spread like wildfire through Major League Baseball. So I could see this in the next few weeks happening again, and they just have to pull the plug because it's like, well, at this point, we're not even playing baseball. So why go on other than money? But we all know how that dollar sign runs things. It's not always the smartest choices that are made. It's the money choices that are made.
Well, and that actually is a good segue because we're going to speaking of money, let's hear a few words from Anchor. All right, so we told you we're going to talk about football, and that is what we're going to hop into first. Let's take a look at the NFL. First, it was announced today that the deadline for opt-outs, I believe, is going to be later on this week. But we already have had some significant lockouts. Running back from the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs, Damian Williams, has opted out. Eagles wide receiver Marquise Goodwin has opted out. Giants offensive tackle Nate Solder has opted out. You have C.J. Mosley of the Jets, Devin Funchess of the Packers, as well as seven Patriots, including Dont'a Hightower, have also opted out for the season. I think Patrick Chung as well is another one of the names.
Why do I feel like that these some of these players for the Patriots are some of their better players? Why do I feel like that maybe they've been coerced to opt out?
What would be the reason? So they could have a terrible season and get Trevor Lawrence? I mean, maybe. I mean,
that's just kind of how the Patriots that's the Patriot way. I mean,
look, I mean, now they
go ahead, opt out, and guess what? We'll set ourselves up for another 10 years of Super Bowl success.
I mean, now that
it wouldn't surprise me.
Now that you say that, I mean, I would not put it past Bill Belichick to do something like that. And also,
or
like
Robert Kraft.
Yeah, or one of them. Kraft. And the fact that, like, they've had some, like, offensive side of the ball players, you know, opt out, like Marquise Goodwin. The other Marquise Goodwin has opted out as well. So, like, maybe they're like, hey, if we leave the cupboard completely bare for Cam, he's not going to play well. If he doesn't play well, we have no reason to re-sign him. Or we can re-sign him on a cheaper deal to be the mentor for Trevor Lawrence.
A cheaper deal? He's already on the league minimum.
Okay, so yeah, I forgot about that. But so you keep him on the league minimum. I would not put it past the New England Patriots to do something like that at all. The preseason has been completely canceled, which, I mean.
Thank God.
That's just kind of. The easiest thing they could have been like, yeah,
I don't think that comes back. I don't think it comes back.
Well, and like the thing is like you could argue like, hey, it's good for, you know, the fifth and sixth round picks to, I mean, and to an extent that might be true, but I feel like going into the season, especially after, you know, weeks of camp, like if you have a good game, if you're, you know, the Colts seventh round pick and you've had a terrible camp, but you turn it on, like one so game. there's something about, you know, the actual game itself, and you have
the game against the Cincinnati Bengals. You turn it on
against their third stringers as well, who are trying this, you know, to make the roster as well. Like, because you hear the things like the. I remember there used to be a promo for the draft, or maybe it was for his Football Life episode for Terrell Davis that was like he made a tackle on special teams in the preseason. And that's when the team took a flyer on him. I was like, but were they high on you to begin with? And maybe they weren't. Maybe if we look at a scouting report, it'll say that they were going to cut him if he didn't make a great play on special teams, and they checked off that.
That's okay.
But okay. The other argument to that is that I remember Sean Baker, and this isn't just Ball State bias, but Sean Baker was a great player for the Ball State Cardinals. He got drafted and put on the Atlanta Falcons. He had a great couple of games and a great camp, and they cut him anyway. So if they want to keep you, they're going to keep you, because even if they think highly of you and you have a bad camp or preseason, they're going to keep you around because they believe in you. So if they don't believe in you, even if you have a great camp, they're going to be like, yeah, we had to take you. We were hoping we would see like that extra, you know, greatness, but we didn't. So hit the bricks. That's what it's ultimately going to amount to. So easiest thing to go. As far as the 2020 schedule is concerned, all international games have been moved back to the U.S.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, no shocker there. If you're a fantasy football fan like myself, you don't have to worry about getting up at 9 o'clock. I mean, I'm usually up anyway, but you don't have to worry about making sure your lineup's set at 9:45 when the Jaguars kick off in London.
Against the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah. Although
you will only get up for that game if you are truly a fan of one of those teams. Or you are really, really into the fantasy football and you have to watch every matchup.
With the way, because isn't like Europe in a better spot than we are? Like, couldn't you theoretically send everybody over there? Like, that's the
no,
way
Americans aren't even allowed in Europe right
well,
now.
I know, but that's
they,
what
they
I'm saying. Like,
their borders off to us.
Theoretically, right? But I'm saying theoretically, wouldn't that be like a better option? Is sending everybody
move the bubble
to...
over there, and you're gonna have full season with fans in the stands,
oh,
and
you're gonna make
they'll
your
all
money.
Wear masks, and they'll all comply with any rules that are out there, and you won't fuss and complain and cry about it.
Exactly. I think
not
we've solved
political.
Yeah. Not trying to, you know, get into that because that's a whole other podcast that probably doesn't belong on this channel. But so the way they've done the schedule this year is all week two matchups are between teams that share the same bye week, which confirms my theory that they could fix Thursday Night Football by doing that anyway. So that they could take teams that were on the bye a week before and play them on Thursday. Then there's going to be no divisional rivalry games, which I'm assuming just rivalry in general, division in general, or bye weeks 3 and 4. And each team that has a home week or has a home game has a road game in those weeks as well. So if you're on the road in week 3, you're going to be home for week 4 and vice versa. So that sets up pretty well. They could essentially, they could also eliminate the week off prior before the Super Bowl. And the season could start, you could have a 14-game schedule starting on October 29th.
Wait. If they got rid of the week off before the Super Bowl, they would be getting rid of the Pro Bowl.
Well, but if it's in that dire straits, I mean, you've seen the MLB.
I don't think anybody would mind if they got rid of the Pro Bowl.
I was like, and we've already seen the Major League Baseball All-Star game get sacrificed to the COVID gods, and so I think you would see the Pro Bowl as well. The NBA All-Star game is the only one, and it barely slipped in. It barely got in before everything started, all the madness became a reality.
They got in by about a month.
Yeah, it was what? Oh,
it
yeah,
was in
it was
February.
Mid-February, and it was mid-March. Yeah, I gotcha.
Just the kind of thing at that point.
You could start the season October 29th and still have the Super Bowl played in February. And so that's the plan. And so that brings us to hot or cold because a majority of what we're going to get into here in a minute deals with the college football slate because I think that's the most intriguing thing. Hot or cold, I have no worries about the NFL. And that's a cold take for me, and it's only because of this. Because I think there are some pros as far as – I think there are some good points. I think the fact that they only play once a week, so you don't have to worry about, because that's what baseball is running into, is because the more days you miss, the more games you miss. And the more games you miss, the harder it is to make up those games later. So, with only playing once a week, that kind of helps you out a little bit as far as trying to get everything in and have everything the way you want to have it. Now, what I kind of perceive as their biggest problem right now is that it seems like a lot of their plan is based on a delayed start rather than on if an outbreak happens during the middle of the season. And I understand there's no way to truly prepare for that. You can't really be, there is a way to prepare, but you won't know until it happens. Kind of like what we're saying with MLB. But like, for instance, if the Colts are supposed to play the Texans, maybe we will see a more centralized thing, but for right now, there's been no, talk of rearranging divisions or anything else. Like, if you have, because even if you have, like, for instance, even if you have, like, the AFC South only plays the NFC South and whatever, and it's a shortened season, like, you're still sending the Colts to Florida, and it's all over the place anyway, because it's not actually as regional as it should be. Which I think is a strength for a college football. But, like, for instance, if you have the Texans and the Colts slated to play week 4, let's say, or week 5, because there's no divisional games 3 and 4. So let's say the Colts and Texans play week 5, but the Texans, have an outbreak. They can't play their game. Well, now the Colts have a game in week 6, but now the Texans have a divisional game to make up with the Colts. So how do you manage that? Now, maybe they should just start with even if you start the season on time, giving yourself some built-in weeks and saying, hey, the NFL is shutting down for this week because we've had an outbreak with a team. But then that kind of raises, you know, if it's just one team, then that kind of raises some eyebrows. Maybe you make sure the team that plays the Colts plays their there's a lot more problems that can happen if with a outbreak in the middle of the season than just, hey, like it seems like once you press the start play button on the NFL season, there's really no plan on if something does happen during the season to kind of muddle up the schedule. So that's the only concern I have for right now. I think they've had plenty of time to plan things out. We don't really have too much details other than the ones I just read off. So we'll see what happens. But that's my only concern, is that I don't know what's going to happen because, you know, yes, baseball's, you know, screwed in the sense that they have to play games every day, but and football only has to play once a week. But you can't play, you know, you can't have the Colts make up a game with the Texans on Wednesday when they just played on Sunday.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it is a concern. I mean, anything is going to be a concern right now. Nothing's going to be 100% certain except the NBA, NHL, WNBA bubble, because those are actually working. So, I mean, if you're not going to quarantine your players as a team together and everything, I love that the NFL is taking these proactive steps. I don't think starting the season delayed is the right move. You need to give yourself as much time as possible. I think shrinking the season down to 14 games is a great move, is a great idea, because it does give you some flexibility then to maneuver things around. It's very much like college football. A lot of these teams go into conference only 10-game schedules rather than 12-game schedules with non-conference. It's, you know, it's only two games, but it still gives you that flexibility. You have a bye week already built in, so there's 3 weeks of extra flexibility you have. And much like a lot of these other college conferences, like, they're making sure that their division games are getting played up front. So while you know everybody's probably going to be healthy early on, you're getting the important games done. I'd say go ahead and do that too in the NFL. Have your first 6 weeks be division only games, and by then, okay, after 6 weeks, we can at least crown division winners. We know who could definitely be in the playoffs for sure, because they are division winners. So if you end up having only like a 12 game schedule, whatever it may be, you know, okay, well, the Colts went 6-0 in the AFC South. You know, because of that, unless they go out and just bomb the rest of their games and that's the only six games they win, which is highly unlikely, you know that they could, if you had to only play six games, you know the Colts, okay, they're the division winners. They move into the playoffs. And then you can build off, okay, who is second place of the second place teams in each division, who had the better records. Okay, you can build a playoff off of division games if you need to. So yeah, it is a concern. It's same thing with Major League Baseball. If you give the players just all this freedom in the world to come and go as they please, do whatever they, you know, who knows what they're doing outside of the facilities, you're going to run into what Major League Baseball is running into right now, and you're going to see outbreaks. But if you work with your players and quarantine them together and you travel together and all this, you can get the full season in. The NBA has shown us that if players stay quarantined, it can be done. And I don't understand why people aren't coming to the grips with, or coming, understanding that concept. And it's the same thing. I'll go over the same kind of plan I have in mind for college football. How to get a season done. How to get it done. It's not going to be fun for anybody involved. No, it's not going to be. But if you really want to play the game, this is what you have to do for this particular year. This isn't going to be permanent. It's just what you have to do for this period of time to get the games in, to play the games. And, you know, but I don't know. I guess it's just too easy to think of, but actually act upon is another thing.
Right. And then you have the fact, you know, and you're especially going to have this with, you know, college athletes, is that you know, no one thinks it's going to be them until it is them. So, yeah. You know, that's the problem too. And another problem that, like, you wouldn't have had to worry about as much with the NBA, even if it wasn't in a bubble, and you'll as you get up through the sports, as you go from NBA to MLB to NFL, the rosters are obviously bigger. The outbreak is obviously more significant. In that specific thing, there's a lot more coaches, there's a lot more staff members. So there's a lot more going on when it comes to the NFL and things like that. So yeah, I mean, it's not going to be fun, like you said, and it'll be interesting to see too, like if they do, put all the conference games, earlier. Okay, are we going to then after that go by like winning percentage? Are we actually, if they go 6-0, crown the champions right then? So then if there are any missed games, at least you know who your champions are. So it'll be interesting to see what they actually do as far as divisions go and that kind of thing. But yeah, I don't have any reason to think they can't do it because we don't know much about the details of what they're planning, but obviously they're watching very closely what happens with like Major League Baseball and things like that. And maybe there's a way too that if you catch, like if they're doing constant testing, because heck, with the Cardinals situation, I think right now they found new positives on Sunday and were able to test and get the results like Sunday night or Monday morning. So I don't know how quickly the test can go, but maybe with how big the roster sizes are for football, maybe you can kind of contain and isolate those people and still play every week. I don't know how that would work.
Well, there is testing out there right now that is it's out there and it's be getting ready to become available to the public that it can give you your results within 2 hours.
Right.
And I know for some college football programs, I think the Big Ten has said that maybe it was just the NCAA in general. Everybody's putting out guidelines these days. I'm so confused about what guidelines are coming from where, and they're such lengthy documents. But one of them is you have to get tested 3 days prior, I believe, or maybe it's a day prior to on-field, or 3 days prior to on-field competition. So you have to get tested weekly, and you'll find out your results. So players that do come back positive, they do contact tracing very well with all of them, and they're out, obviously. But it's like a 14-day quarantine, so that's only two games. You're maybe down a player. It certainly is doable, especially in the NFL when you have practice squads. It's very doable, in my opinion. Maybe you allow the expansion of practice squads. That's another idea. So that way they have a well of guys they can go to and bring in that are at least already in the building and have a somewhat understanding of the system.
Yeah. I mean, and hopefully that is what we see. Now moving on, we're going to get into some college football as well. Before we do, we want to remind you guys, especially if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you might be listening, that you can follow us at Crash Course FM on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook, Crash Course Podcast, and you can our main site is anchor.fm/Crash Course. All those socials, of course, at the bottom of the screen. If you're watching on YouTube right now, we do broadcast live on YouTube every Monday. And then release the audio version on Tuesday morning. So make sure you guys are locked in there. We have two viewers right now in the chat. We're working towards 10 subscribers. So hello. If you haven't hit that sub button, make sure you do that. Because we do have content dropping this week on the Crash Course Podcast YouTube channel. In addition to what you're seeing now, we're going to have a video series called Memory Lane, where we watch basically old games, react to them, analyze them. It's going to be a lot of fun. So hope you guys tune in for that. That'll release on Friday morning. So make sure you guys are locked in there. But yeah, make sure you're following us on all socials. And remember, you can hear the Crash Course Podcast every Tuesday, wherever podcasts can be heard. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you can think of, you can find us. I'm sure you can think of some places that you can't, but none that I can think of right off the top of my head. So, we're everywhere. So make sure you guys, we thank you for your continued support of the podcast as well. So let's hop in to some college football, as the main thing we've seen for college football as far as the season is concerned is conference-only scheduling. The Big Ten announced in early July that they would move to a conference-only schedule, which no start date has been released at this time. The ACC will go to an 11-game schedule on September 12th. That includes Notre Dame, so that's interesting. I really was hoping that they'd be like, well, I'm sorry, you didn't pick a conference, so it looks like there's going to be no Notre Dame football in 2020. I really was hoping that would be the case.
This is still Notre Dame's worst nightmare.
You think so?
Partially.
Yes, okay. Partially. Okay.
Not fully. This is like the beginning of a worst nightmare for them.
Now, what is going to be part of that nightmare, I'm sure, is the fact that Clemson is on their schedule. Potentially twice. But they do not have to play in Clemson. Now, granted, if there's no
fan, they don't have to play any big ACC opponents on the road.
True. Now,
and they don't have to play Miami.
Yeah.
And that's a huge loss for the ACC. That's a good old rivalry. Notre Dame and Miami, Catholics versus convicts.
Yeah.
And you passed up on it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you want Notre Dame's first time to be in the ACC to be nice and cushy. And yeah,
so you get from Clemson,
but at home, and it's not going to be, you're not going to have, I mean, heck, if you have to delay the season or there's any risk, maybe Trevor Lawrence opts out. You never know what's going to happen. Plus, that's going to be an interesting thing too, to look at, is how many fans are going to be allowed in the stands, because I've heard like some NFL teams are going to like limited scheduling, because obviously football stadiums are a lot bigger. You can spread people out a lot more. So maybe we'll see something like that. So even if you are a place that's known for having, you know, a tough, ruckus crowd, you're not going to have that tough, ruckus crowd.
I don't think you're going to see students, which is unfortunate. I think it's going to be family members, recruits. You got to have recruits.
Right.
And the people that can spend good money to keep that program afloat.
The boosters will be let in. There are going to be 10 conference games, one in-state non-conference matchup. So I'm interested to see, because Notre Dame dropped Ball State, didn't they? And couldn't they have kept Ball State if they were doing it in conference? Or no?
They played Ball State last year.
Right, but there was a game – like, Ball State – so a team dropped Ball State, and then they had to reschedule with Iowa State. Was it
– IU. It was IU.
Okay. But anyway, that – like.
Oh, and I believe Auburn?
Well, yeah, they would have had to with conference. Yeah. So maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was Auburn, and they had to reschedule Iowa State.
Notre Dame would not have scheduled Ball State. Well, they would have, but I don't think it was back-to-back seasons with Notre Dame.
I gotcha. Okay. Well, because I was going to say, since they have to schedule one in-state rival, you won't be able to do Purdue. You won't be able to do IU. So it would be interesting to see if they let Notre Dame, like, skimp out on that and schedule. So, like, it'll be interesting to see what they allow. You know, or if they're like, hey, even if Ball State doesn't have a season, round up the troops and we'll play one game against them, because we have to have one more to make it a full schedule. The SEC is also going to go to a 10-game conference-only schedule on September 26th. The Pac-12 is going to a 10-game conference-only schedule on September 26th. The Big 12 is still undecided, which is why Iowa State scheduled Ball State. But they're still, they're still expected to decide later on this week. So we will see what happens with that. Now, we pulled the community at Crash Course FM on Twitter. We pulled you guys, and we asked if conference-only scheduling made the season more intriguing or less intriguing, or if you were indifferent about it. And the Crash Course community was actually indifferent. And I'm sorry, guys. I think you're wrong. I think you guys are wrong. Because half said it would be, half said it wouldn't be. We technically got 5 votes. There was one for indifference. So I was like, well, I think that one vote is symbolic of the whole entire poll. It's the fact that one person voted indifferent. So I think this makes it very intriguing. And there were even, you know, I read some articles even by like the SEC that were like, hey, it's going to be really tough on the College Football Playoff Committee. And I was like, yeah, it's going to be very intriguing to see what they do, because to see how far they're willing to go with certain biases. Because – you know, there's obviously some conferences that benefit from conference only. There's some teams that don't benefit, because right away, by not having any you know, cross, you know, conference play, not having any non-conference schedule, you miss out. Like, obviously the good teams are going to be good no matter what, the bad teams are going to be bad no matter what, but you don't kind of get the barometer of those mid-range teams, how good they are. So for instance, if Auburn plays Ball State and only beats them by 7, then when Alabama beats Auburn, you're like, well, Auburn's like not very good anyway. So you kind of get those eye test games out of the way, you know, or if Auburn plays, you know, Oregon in the non-conference, like they did last year, and plays really well, your opinion is better about Auburn and that kind of thing. So that's what you miss out by the non-conference schedule. Although, you know, yeah, a bulk of their season is already in conference, 8 games typically in conference, 4 games out. But what I think makes it interesting is the College Football Playoff Committee. First of all, before we get into that, though, I did want to mention that it is good in terms of COVID, because college sports are the most regional of, you know, they're more regional than pro sports. You don't see, you know, it is compacted more to a region. Now, I know with the Big Ten, you know, you could be going all the way to Piscataway, New Jersey, if you're Purdue, let's say. So that's obviously far, but you're not seeing you're not seeing Purdue going to go play USC, you know, to play a Big Ten game. Like that's not like you would see in the NFL with the Colts going to Houston to play, an interdivision game. So that's what you do get. And so I think that's what actually bodes well for how the college football season is going to run this year, is that it is more regionally based. And the fact that games get canceled actually quite frequently. Now, conference games, no, but you typically see, you know, we've seen games canceled because of hurricanes, because of, you know, different things like that. So they're not afraid to drop a game off their schedule. Now, as far as conferences is concerned, I understand it makes it a little bit more complicated, but we'll kind of see that going forward. But as far as the College Football Playoff Committee, it looks like this. The preseason rankings are going to be the first domino to fall. The furthest any team is ranked preseason and still made the college football playoff was back in 2015. That team was Oklahoma. They were number 19. They worked their way up to 10th before losing to Texas. They fell back to number 19. They finished the season with wins over number 4 Baylor, number 11 TCU, and number 9 Oklahoma State. Now, granted, those are all conference games. So, you know, they were able to claw their way back up due to conference. And their one conference loss was to Texas. So you kind of see what happened there. Everything was inside of the conference. But of the 24 teams selected to the College Football Playoff Committee, by the College Football Playoff Committee over 6 seasons, only 5 teams have been selected having started the season outside the top 10. So there are no preseason rankings right now, understandably so. But the NCAA had a ranking. They were the only rankings that were actually – recently updated, because I think there were some, you know, I was going to go to Athlon because that's where I used to go when I was younger to go look at college football stuff for the season. And their last like update was May. Now, granted, not a lot has changed, but I wanted to go with the most recent stuff. So let's first of all, start out with the ACC. They've got 2 teams, number 1 Clemson and number 11 Notre Dame. Those 2 teams play each other in South Bend, like we mentioned earlier. Clemson has made the college football playoff 5 times, or has made 5 appearances in the college football playoff and has won 2 titles. Notre Dame was blown out by Clemson in their only appearance in 2018. The ACC doesn't really care too much about conference-only scheduling because literally their only 2 chances to get a team in are Clemson or Notre Dame. So if neither of them, you know, play well or one of them beats the other to win the conference, you're hoping that they at least one of those 2, you know, is a 1-loss team and can hopefully get in. So they're kind of putting all their eggs in the Clemson Notre Dame basket. So conference only doesn't matter too much for them because they have a relatively easier cakewalk of a season for either Notre Dame or Clemson. Now the SEC obviously loves a conference only schedule. They have 6 teams ranked.
I don't know if the SEC loves a conference only schedule.
They do in the sense that they're going to have more teams ranked highly. Because
that's true. In that sense, but the SEC sure does love to beat up on teams like Furman or Jacksonville State.
Right.
And they like to schedule those bad boys right smack dab at the end of the season.
Right before the rivalry games. But they've got – so currently right now they have number 3 Alabama, number 4 LSU, number 5 Georgia, number 9 Florida, number 10 Auburn, number 13 Texas A&M. Those are the only teams the SEC has ranked in the NCAA's top 25. But, you know, because those teams are so are ranked so highly, then obviously I just don't know how far they're going to actually drop. And if you're playing ranked team after ranked team after ranked team after ranked team, then obviously if your two losses are to, you know, to Georgia and Alabama, then you're more likely to get in than if your one loss is to Texas. You know what I mean? Or your one loss is to North Carolina in the ACC. So they benefit by having more highly ranked teams. And over the course of the college football playoffs, the SEC has had at least one team in each season and has won half of the titles in the college football playoff era. And, of course, we know how they ended the BCS era as well. So you have this the committee has chosen one loss non-conference champion twice. One of those two was 2017 Alabama. So they have a record of choosing, that year it was multiple teams from the same conference, but a non-conference, champion. Because what I'm saying is why it's good for the SEC is because they're most likely to have, two highly ranked teams make their conference championship game in likely a team already in the college football playoff and another team either ranked at like number 4 or ranked number 5. And if, it's a good game, let's say it's Georgia and Alabama in the SEC title game. Alabama, wins over Georgia. Georgia is now a 2-loss, non-conference champion, but they won the SEC East. They had to play Georgia and Auburn, or they had to play Florida and Auburn. You know, their schedule and their wins are going to look a lot better than, say, the ACC's wins. So if you're trying to compare, let's say Georgia and Notre Dame, let's say Notre Dame shocks the world and wins the ACC this year. Like, you're going to take Georgia over Notre Dame in that scenario. So I think they have the best shot, especially with how much the playoff committee loves them, of having multiple teams in, which is why I think the SEC loves the fact that it's a conference-only schedule this year. Now you look at the Big Ten. I think they've got the most at stake here, in my opinion. You've got they have three teams ranked in the top 25. Number 2, Ohio State. Number 8, Penn State. And number 15, Michigan. Now, Ohio State has made 3 of the Big Ten's 4 appearances. Ohio State has gone 48-4 in Big Ten play during the college football playoff era. 2019 was actually the first time they had gone undefeated since the first year of the college football playoff as far as the conference is concerned. I guess overall, too. So it was that Cardale Jones crazy Zeke Elliott season that they were undefeated. And yes, they're likely to do that same thing this year, but
they were not undefeated that season. They were a 1-loss team, but they went through the conference undefeated.
Right.
They lost at home to Virginia Tech earlier
right.
in the season.
Right. That is true. So, but yeah, that was so it's been a minute before last year that they had gone through the entire conference season without losing a game. So that is significant. The Big Ten has missed the college football playoff they missed the college football playoff 3 straight years from 2016 to 2018. That was when Penn State won. They went 11-2, and Ohio State went 11-2. Ohio State made the playoff without winning the Big Ten in 2016. But they also finished 12-1 as Big Ten champs in 2018, but missed the playoffs because Notre Dame was chosen. So they have had only 1 loss. And I mean, obviously, Justin Fields is going to look sensational. He's going to be high. He's been trophy candidate. So I don't think they're going to have like a season where, like, if they lose a game, it's going to be kind of teetering on the edge. But you never know. The precedent is set that the Ohio State Buckeyes could win the Big Ten, go 12-1, and still miss the playoffs. And because
if they lose to a ranked opponent, they can still make the conference championship. But if they pull an Ohio State like they have been known to in the past, and they lose to an unranked opponent and they lose in an ugly fashion, they don't get in. I mean, it's like the fact that one of the years that they had 1 loss, well, two years in a row they had 1 loss, they didn't get in. The 1 losses were to Iowa on the road at Iowa, and it was an ugly loss.
Yeah, they lost like 40.
And next year, what?
I said they lost big that year, and they lost big again the next year.
And then the very next year, they went on the road and they lost at an unranked Purdue. I mean, Purdue was 3-3 at the time, and they lost to Purdue, and it was an ugly loss. It was Ohio State was never truly in the game. So those were two seasons that they got kept out with one loss, but they also had one really bad loss.
Right. And so who the conference only scheduling really sucks for is the Pac-12 and the Big 12.
Always.
For the Pac-12, there's only
The Pac-12's not even going to play. Come on, they're all going to boycott.
Well, now those are – I don't think it's full teams yet. I think it's just it hasn't grown there yet. But, I mean, I'm just saying right now it's players. I tried to investigate who those players were, and I didn't really get too much information on it. But
– it's the same players that tried to get the men's basketball player teams to boycott playing in the NCAA tournament. Everybody said, okay.
They've got one team, number six, Oregon. They've had – the Pac-12 has had two appearances, none since 2016. That was when Washington made it. They're 1-2. Their average margin of defeat in those two losses are 20 points. So they haven't shown up except for the one game against Florida State that Marcus Mariota and that Oregon team had. And they have had a two-loss conference champ each of the last three seasons. So the Pac-12 has not really done itself really any favors, so you can almost automatically count. I mean, not maybe automatically, but it's pretty safe to bet. It's pretty safe to bet that the Pac-12 will not be included in the college football playoff, especially from a conference-only standpoint, because there's not going to be a lot of ranked teams that you're going to beat. So if it's just Oregon and, you know, they have to basically run the table because a loss is going to be to an unranked team, most likely. So you then have the Big 12, which they have three teams that are ranked in the top 15, number 7, Oklahoma, number 12, Oklahoma State, and number 14, Texas. Oklahoma has made all four appearances of the college football playoff for the Big 12. Oklahoma has never made the college football playoff without winning the Big 12. And in 2016, Oklahoma ran the table in the Big 12 but missed the playoffs because their losses were out of conference to Houston and Ohio State. So, I mean, again, no conference slate or no non-conference slate this year in college football, but – what that shows is that, you know, there are, if you're not the SEC and you're not the ACC, who is flippant and like, well, if we get a Notre Dame or a Clemson, cool. But if not, we really didn't have anybody else to send to the show. Like, if you're a Penn State, if you're a Texas, if you're, you know, you've literally never been. And even when you've won the conference, which Penn State has, you haven't gone as well. So it's just basically begs the question, you know, how is this going to go? So I think it makes it super intriguing, the fact that you have conference-only scheduling, because you've seen how the conferences have been viewed and treated by the playoff committee up to this point.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting to see how this all plays out, especially considering this afternoon, the commissioner of the Big Ten penned a letter saying, you know, there are still a lot of safety concerns, and we are willing, if there are too many safety concerns, we're willing to not play. So that would be a huge domino. And obviously the Big Ten has been kind of the leader in a lot of this. They were the first ones to step up and say, hey, no non-conference games, 10-game conference-only schedule. A lot of other conferences are looking towards the Big Ten right now and saying, all right, your move, we will follow in suit. But I don't see that happening, honestly. I mean, because there have been athletic directors in the Big Ten coming out saying, hey, you know, even though we're the Big Ten and we make a lot of money, we don't play football. That's like a death sentence for us. I mean, Wisconsin, Barry Alvarez, their athletic director, already came out and he penned a letter to boosters and alums saying, if you know, we want to play football this year. If we don't play football, we're looking at losing upwards of $100 million. And then if you don't play football, there's already an automatic $58.7 million that you're losing out on your TV deal with the Big Ten Network. I mean, right now, the Big Ten has the most lucrative TV deal out of any Power Five conference. And to not have football played, you're losing out on that. You're not just losing out on game day revenue and ticket sales and all that stuff, but you're losing out on your TV revenue. And that is a big, big deal. And if we're already seeing some like Power Five schools cut back on sports like Stanford has done, just imagine if there is no football, what's going to happen at some of these schools. I mean, schools like Indiana or Purdue or Northwestern, Rutgers, Maryland, these are programs that don't have the same kind of bankroll like Michigan, Ohio State, even Iowa and Wisconsin have. So it's going to hit certain schools harder than it will hit some, but it's going to be a big hit for everyone involved. And it could honestly drastically change the landscape of college athletics as we know it, because, I mean, yes, the revenue sports are considered football and men's basketball, but to be honest, the workhorse is football. It is the one that carries the bankroll essentially for college athletic departments, and that's going to be a really big deciding factor for these conferences. Is are you willing to take that risk of losing out on three quarters potentially of your budget, and how can you survive that? So it will be interesting. I think just from a game standpoint, it's going to be fun. I think you're going to see, like I said, there's been talk about the Big Ten trying to do just as many divisional games up front as possible to get those in. So that way you can at least get two teams. You can say, okay, East winner, West winner, playing the Big Ten championship. We at least have a conference champion. And then trying to – they're looking, I know there's talk of, you know, obviously Purdue is not going to go to Piscataway. That's never going to happen. And you're looking at more regional matchups, cross-divisional. So you're looking at who's cross-divisional that's nearby. Well, Indiana's already on Purdue's schedule, so that's going to be a cross-divisional that's going to stay. And Michigan's already on the schedule as it is as well. So if you're looking to add two games, okay, maybe you add in, you're going to add in Michigan State, that's cross-divisional, and potentially Ohio State, there's another cross-divisional. So this could be a good thing for teams that have the potential to be good this year and need to play more ranked opponents, but it also could be bad for the ranked opponents that if they get beat by a team that, you know, is borderline bowl eligible, then how that affects them. So that it could be a good thing for like a Purdue. It could be a really good thing, but it could also be a very bad thing for an Ohio State.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's going to be, you know, tough because of that fact. And that's the thing is that, like, you know, because of the fact that the college football playoff in the past has shown that, like, hey, we're not only going to put multiple teams from the same conference in, but you can potentially win a conference like the Big Ten and still be left out. So, for instance, you know, like, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, like, you know, Penn State could essentially, you know, if they could lose to Ohio State in the regular season, but then play, if depending on if they get rid of the divisions, which I don't know if they will, because that'll be another thing too. But if they get rid of the divisions, well, because they've done that like the ACC.
The ACC has done it, yeah. So it is, I think the ACC did a great thing by putting out and showing kind of how they broke down their schedule. Right. And I think that's a model for a lot of conferences to look at now and say, okay, it can be done. This is how we do it. And this is how we can do it without divisions and making sure that limiting travel as much as possible.
Right. So it'll be,
and honestly, I could see all of this blowing up altogether. I could see it going, okay, now you just have to schedule who you can nearby. And I could see like a series, like a Midwest type thing going on where you're seeing Ball State playing Purdue, IU, Ohio State, and so forth. You know, just who can you get on your schedule that you can bus to, go in on that day and then bus out the same day as well, or bus in the night before, whatever, you know, just depending on distance. But we're not going to send Penn State over to Nebraska or Wisconsin over to Maryland or anything like that. Try to schedule your games as close together as possible, so that way you can bus there easily or get in and out as quickly as possible.
So it's funny because I think you and I have differing views on this. Like, is that, I mean, heck, that would be super old school. That's like the old like barnstorming days that like teams would just schedule teams that are close and see what happens after that. So could you see potentially there being no college football playoff and them just basically being like, hey, you know what? We're just going to name a champion like we used to do in the, you know, we're just going to get together, name a champion that way? Or
the college football playoff is the big money maker for college football. You're going to have to have your college football playoff. It's in line with canceling the NCAA men's basketball tournament for college football. It would not be a good thing. If you're going to have football, you're going to figure out who your top four teams are. You're going to put them in a bubble, and you're going to play that playoff in a bubble.
And that brings me to my next point, because I don't know, because there already have been reports that, like, the Bulls are trying to figure out what they're going to do.
Well, already one. The Red Box Bowl has actually pulled themselves out. So that's one less bowl for the Pac-12 and the Big Ten to qualify for. And I could see a lot of other ones falling in line as well, except maybe the big ones, the New Year's Six. I don't see the Rose Bowl getting canceled. Maybe, I mean, California is just going off the rails with their restrictions on everything. Right. So that's a big possibility right there. But honestly, you can have the Rose Bowl and it not be in Pasadena. I know that sounds crazy. It's like, well, that's like having the Indy 500 down at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. No, it's nothing like that. It's nothing like that at all. You can have all the – you can call it the Rose Bowl and play it somewhere where they are allowing you to play. I mean, you can have a – I would say, hey, have a New Year's Six bubble, have a college football playoff bubble. And guess what? Everybody else, if you were eligible to make a bowl and there is a bowl for you, okay, go play in it. But if there's not and you were eligible, we are still going to give you that additional practice time that you would have gotten from a bowl. Because honestly, that is the biggest thing for some of these teams, these non-New Year's Six and non-college football playoff teams. It's not – I mean, it is about getting to go experience the bowl game and all that. But that costs money. I mean, look, IU last year, their bowl game against Tennessee, they spent more money than they actually made on the bowl game. But the big thing for these teams is that added practice time, that time for them to get themselves better for the next season. It's not really about the bowl game. The bowl game is kind of like a glorified all-star game in essence for some of these events. I mean, it is bragging rights, especially some of the those are the New Year's bowls that we're talking about that are the big ones. So I would say, hey, we may not have a full slate of bowls, but if you were eligible to play in a bowl game, you do get that extra practice time. Whether you take that extra practice time now at the end of the season, or you can, because of everything going on, we want to get kids off of campus at a certain time, go ahead and tack it on to the beginning or end of your spring practices as well. So you do get that extra week or two of practice that you would have gotten from the bowl game. And that's the big reward, honestly.
Right. And so, because that's kind of what brings me to what I'm kind of thinking here is like, and what makes the kind of the third level of how intriguing this is not just how what the college football playoff has done in the past and how regional college sports is and the rankings and everything, but the fact that, like, do you see the college football playoff? Because we've already seen expanded playoffs in, MLB. For this year,
I don't see it expanding. No,
you don't think so. Like, no. But if you
not this year, this is not the year to do it.
If there's conference only play and there's no bowl games, except for,
I don't see it. I think because if you're gonna do the playoff, it's gonna have to be in a bubble type situation so you can get it done in a timely fashion.
It's an extra.
I don't see you expanding it. I don't, because then there's just so many arguments that go into expanding it. Well, how this, that, there's not enough time really to, if they were going to look at expanding it, they would have already come out and said, hey, we're going to look at expanding the college football playoff. But that conversation is not even on the table right now because they have to figure out how they can even play the games right now.
I don't know, man. That's just an extra week that you have to tack onto a bubble. I mean, that's that. Like, if you go to eight teams, first of all, how you choose people that are in it, the five conference champions, like you were going to originally, or at least, because then, first of all, you can have, like, basically a Final Four situation, like you said. I mean, if you're going to put the Final Four teams in the bubble anyway, then why couldn't you add, four other teams?
See, the thing is, we're acting like this is going to be such a big, shortened season. We're chopping two games off. Two.
Oh no, I don't. I'm going at the full 10. If you play, because there's going to be a chance theoretically. Like, if let's say, and I mean, I know all you can throw out what ifs all day, but at the same time, like, there's a chance that there could be a one loss SEC team that you know, their one loss is they lose to Alabama in the SEC championship game. And then if Ohio State also has one loss, I mean, and Clemson runs the table.
That same situation can happen in the Big Ten very easily. You could have several one-loss teams in the Big Ten. I mean, it's not as likely
because all the good teams. They've been willing to put in from the Big Ten, and it's Ohio State.
Michigan State got in.
Once. Year two, they made it in.
They did not deserve to be there.
And they got just absolutely run out of the gym by Alabama, rightfully so. But that's what I'm saying is that there's a chance, too, that you have we're talking about if some of these teams make it to their title games with pristine records, there's a chance that they just all go roughshod all each other. And we're talking about, we've got a two-loss SEC champion and we've got a two-loss Big Ten champion and a three-loss ACC champion. Like, there's a chance it could just all be mayhem, too. And I don't think lopping, do the non-conference.
So, really, you want to expand it this year with conference only and Oregon gets in by default because they play in such a weak conference?
Not necessarily.
That's one of the arguments that they would have to look at. Who gets in? How do you say they get in? Do you get an automatic bid if you won your conference? But let's say Oregon wins with their conference with three or four losses. How do you reconcile that?
If
Oregon's not even considered a top 25 team, but hey, they won the Pac-12, so they get into the playoff, even though they have no business being there.
They'd still be in the top 25 because they're Oregon. But
Oregon luster is kind of falling off.
Yeah, true. But I guess what I'm saying is that, you expand the college football playoff, especially if bowls are dropping left and right. If you're going to have the New Year's Six bowls anyway, then you can expand the playoffs and showcase those teams, and see if it works. Because that's the whole reason why they're expanding it for baseball, is to see if it works. And so that's why you would be like, okay, let's try the eight-team playoff.
Because of the fact that they're trying to get kids off of campus as quickly as possible as well, these aren't professionals. These are amateur student athletes we're dealing with, and they're already very concerned about their health and well-being, and whether not about their certain health and well-being, but whether they can contract the virus and be asymptomatic. Which most of these cases for these kids, they are asymptomatic because hey, they are in pristine condition. But they're more worried about taking it home to their families who are lower income that may not have the health care available to them that other individuals may have. So that's what their concerns are. Adding another week onto the schedule is going to possibly tell these kids they really don't care about our health and well-being. They're more worried about extra dollars, and I'm going to opt out. That's the biggest concern of looking at expanding the playoff this year. Now, in the future, honestly, from a football side of things, yeah, if you took the pandemic out of this and it was just kind of some natural disaster that happened that's causing us to have to change the schedules around a little bit and everything's going to be fine by the time the season kicks off, I think everybody would be on board with expanding the playoff. But because there's so many concerns about the health and well-being of these student athletes and of their families, I don't see it happening because they don't want to they don't want to expand anything too far and continue to put these student athletes at risk. They want to get the games done that they can get done. They want to get as many games done as they possibly can. And at this point, adding anything more.
But see, I don't think they'd be adding anything. They're doing is because the way it's set up right now, Oregon would still play, let's say, in the Rose Bowl. So if they still play in the Rose Bowl, what's the difference between them playing there as opposed to
All we know, they just may put a complete end to all bowl games still and just say, we're only going to play the college football playoff.
Which is very true, very possible.
Because ultimately the goal is who's the national champion. It doesn't matter. We don't look back and say, so-and-so was the 2007 Outback Bowl champion. No, nobody looks back on that. They look back on a season and say, so-and-so was the national champion.
Take nothing away from the 2007 Minnesota Golden Gophers. I don't know if they won. I thought that'd be really cool.
I think it may have been Michigan.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, let's go ahead and wrap this up here with some hot or cold. First question is, Notre Dame will make the ACC title game. I originally put cold. I'm going to go with hot.
I'm going hot.
Yeah. They've been 23-8 since their ACC agreement began. Yes, obviously there's some big losses. It's a 70% win percentage. But at the same time, they've played well against the ACC. The really only teams that have given them trouble have been like the Miamis of the world, who they don't play, like you mentioned, and Clemson. So I think they can get there. And plus, at least fewer fans in the stands means that their games at Pitt and at UNC are a little bit less daunting. So they don't have to go to a hostile environment against UNC or against Pitt. And then I think because of that, you more or less go, there's not that added part of the atmosphere to go along with it. So I think Notre Dame, do they have an amazing season? I don't know, but I think they make it to the ACC championship game and get to play against Clemson. Yeah. You still haven't told us how this is going to be a nightmare scenario for Notre Dame. That's what you got to get into.
It's a nightmare scenario because they don't get to pad their schedule with cupcakes like UConn.
True. Yeah.
And if there are no fans, that could be it's a deficit to Notre Dame, in my opinion. Sometimes it's the crowd that kind of gets them riled up and going, whereas Notre Dame tends to be their own worst enemy. One of the things I've noticed with Notre Dame over the past several seasons is sometimes they play down to their opponents. I mean, there was no reason Ball State should have gone into Notre Dame and almost knocked off Notre Dame last year. No reason whatsoever. I don't care how good Ball State may have been. That game should not have been that close. But Notre Dame does tend to play down to their opponents, and that could potentially be an issue for them this year when they go on the road, or even if they're playing at home against somebody. But, yeah, I think it's a hot take. I think they do get to the ACC title game because the ACC has gotten rid of divisions this year. They are taking the top two teams record-wise from the 10-game conference schedule and the one non-conference in-state game. So, I mean, yeah, the two best teams going into this season right now for the ACC schedules are Clemson and Notre Dame. Prove me otherwise. I mean, who has the ability?
North Carolina is ranked 17th. That's another team.
Okay, North Carolina may have a chance, and they're coached by Mac Brown, so that team has some.
They're a dark horse, but I don't think it happens.
It could this year just because the way things are set up, all they have to do is beat Notre Dame.
True.
And you lose to Clemson, who cares? Everybody's going to lose to Clemson unless Trevor Lawrence doesn't play.
Right.
Which is a real possibility. So if that's a possibility, then Notre Dame still gets into the ACC championship game. Could you imagine Notre Dame ACC football champions?
Yeah, and then next year they dip and back to stay. yeah, back to independent. Thanks for the trophy.
Thanks for the conference championship. We're good with playing UConn and BYU. Thank you very much. I think they get in. Unless they pull a Notre Dame and they lose to somebody like a Virginia Tech.
Or, yeah, somebody like that.
Or, or a Boston College comes out of nowhere. But let's be honest. that was like the one winnable non-conference schedule game for Purdue, going to Boston College.
Yep. And now it's gone. Now.
Hey, Purdue fans are not crying about losing that non-conference schedule. No way. That was the ninth hardest non-conference schedule in the country. Let's be real.
Final question here. The fate of the Big Ten rests with Ohio State. I think it's hot. Now, especially it gets interesting if Justin Fields goes the Trevor Lawrence route and they both opt out because they're both the biggest, highly touted, picks in the draft quarterback-wise for next year. Ohio State has won four of the six championships in playoff era and has made three of four conference appearances for the Big Ten. 2016 Penn State. Now, this is an interesting thing that I found out about the 2016 Penn State team that won the Big Ten and then was still left out in favor of Ohio State. The 2016 Penn State Nittany Lions, they have been the only team to win the Big Ten, not named Ohio State, and then not make the playoff. That season, they beat number 2 Ohio State, and that was, I think, the start or the second game of a 9-game winning streak to end the season. So they talk about, you know, coming into the end of the season hot, finishing strong. They beat number 2 Ohio State at home. Now, granted, the problem, I'm sure, was the fact that, I think a week or two before, they lost to number 4 Michigan 49-10. That didn't help. But it's proven that a team not named Ohio State can win the Big Ten, go 11-1, basically run the gauntlet of the end of the Big Ten schedule, win the conference championship, and still not get in, which I think is the crazy thing. So if Ohio State doesn't win it, that could bode some problems for the Big Ten.
That's mostly because of the last game Ohio State plays. Ohio State can drop a game early on if it's a close game or whatnot, and then run the gauntlet, mostly because their last conference game that they play before the Big Ten championship
is Michigan.
Michigan is typically ranked top 15. So that's a big boost for you right there. They hold off that game until the very end. But yeah, I agree. This is definitely a hot take. Honestly, I don't see Justin Fields opting out. I can see Trevor Lawrence opting out, because what does Trevor Lawrence really have to prove other than winning a Heisman, you know? But he's won a national championship. He's played in the college football playoff. He's played in the title game a couple of times. He doesn't have much left to prove. Whereas Justin Fields, they only have one season of film on him. And he was so close to getting to that national championship game and having that taken away from him. I think he has a personal vendetta and some personal stuff he wants to prove and accomplish. And also, I don't know, Ohio State is so much more like a family feel and everything. And also, there's just a lot of weird things going on with Clemson and Dabo Sweeney and his talking about the social justice stuff. It's kind of just strange going on down there. But Ohio State, you just feel like you don't see him opting out. I don't get that feeling that he's going to do that, because he does have a little bit. People need to see a little bit more from him. I mean, they saw a lot, enough, most likely. But players like him, he needs to come back. Players like Rondell Moore for Purdue, he needs to come back to prove that he's healthy. And I think Justin Fields just has some more goals that he would like to accomplish before walking over to the NFL. So, but yeah, this is definitely hot. The Big Ten's best chances have always lived and died with Ohio State, unless Michigan can figure out their issues, but let's not hold our breath on that one.
Yeah, I tried to convince myself Michigan could possibly win the Big Ten this year, and I was like, eh.
And I'm not sold on Penn State either. I really am not. A lot of people are really high on Penn State. They lost quite a bit this past offseason. Yeah, they return
Minnesota, rowed the boat.
Yeah, they return Micah Parsons. But, man, they lost. The loss of KJ Hamler is going to be much more felt than people realize, and then losing Pat Freiermuth as well. That was like the security blanket for Sean Clifford. So I'm not 100% sold on Penn State. I don't think Michigan and Penn State are going to come out of the gates as hot as people want to think they're going to. And it's going to be on Ohio State to potentially carry the Big Ten into the playoff, because I mean, Wisconsin, they lost Quintez Cephas and Jonathan Taylor, their two biggest offensive weapons. Who did they replace those guys with? We don't know if – I mean, Wisconsin typically churns out workhorse after workhorse after workhorse running back, but typically we know who that is going into the replacement year. We don't. Iowa's a dumpster fire right now within their own locker room. How are they all going to come together and play on the field if they can't even trust their own head coach? Michigan State, really, first year of Mel Tucker. I mean, I'm not 100% sold yet there. I know Maryland brought in a couple 5-star recruits, and they got they got Tua's brother transferring in, but okay, where I don't see it happening there. I don't think the Big Ten is truly going to be, as you can see the baby doll popping up over my shoulder. no, that is not a real baby. That is a baby doll.
that's what B-Scott does with his kids during the podcast. You just turn them over. Stop crying. It's quiet. We can record. All right. Good deal. Let's go. But
I don't see any other team really stepping up and being a playoff contender from the Big Ten outside of Ohio State. It's going to be really tough for anybody. I mean, is it possible? Yeah. Could a team like a Purdue come out of nowhere and shock everybody? Of course they can. I mean, they're going to have one of the more dynamic offenses in the Big Ten this year, but does that mean they have what it takes to jump up into the top four in the country? No, they're not. Minnesota, you know what? They lost quite a bit as well on both offense and defense. Yes, they returned Tanner Morgan. Yes, they returned Rashard Bateman. But, man, there's something going on in Minnesota as well. There are a ton of recruits jumping off that ship or that boat. They don't want to row that boat anymore. And they've lost a couple of recruits this year, and that's usually PJ's bread and butter is his pitch to recruits to get them on board. So there's just some things that are just going on around the Big Ten that are kind of head scratchers for me and make me not as confident in a lot of other teams outside of Ohio State, of course. I think Ohio State's the cream of the crop in the Big Ten, no surprise. And they're set up to be the cream of the crop for a long time to come.
That will do it for this week's edition of the Crash Course Podcast. Thank you guys all for tuning in. Thank you to Paul Burnett on YouTube for getting in the chat there. We definitely appreciate you guys hanging out. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Crash Course FM. Like us on Facebook, Crash Course Podcast. We can be found at anchor.fm/crashcourse. You can hear us every Tuesday wherever podcasts can be heard. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, pretty much everywhere. And remember, if you're listening to it on the audio side, or even if you're here right now on YouTube, make sure you subscribe. We've got some new content dropping on Friday, Memory Lane, first episode of that drops. So make sure you guys are tuned in for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Next week, we're going to be, we just did a kind of a preview of the NBA restarting again. We'll be diving into the NBA playoffs, which will be getting ready to go as well.
And for everybody that loves this idea, Craig is also going to have his dream rebirth of potentially the right. NFL having a minor league system in the XFL because – gentlemen, the XFL is alive again.
It has been purchased by The Rock, so we'll see if that can come to fruition. But we have a lot of plans for you guys over the next week or so. Can't wait to get that turned out for you guys. But until next time, have a good week, everybody.